This is a CBC podcast.
I'm always in book clubs. I love book clubs. Invite me to your book club.
The numbers don't lie. The numbers don't lie. Romance does numbers.
The first 100 pages or so were just emotionally devastating.
And when I got to the end, I was hurting. I was sobbing.
It evokes something from us. And that's the whole point of what makes a book good, what keeps somebody engaged.
So I think it's perfect for right now.
This is a book about interpersonal relationships. It's about human connections, human experience.
And that's, again, genius in the way she writes. She just has to come near the subject and we know it's there.
And to see her struggle with issues that I've struggled with in that way, I've never had representation in literature like that. I've always had to put myself into other people's experiences, but no one has ever sat down and said, as a Black woman, sometimes people make you feel less.
I think sometimes people have reservations about the romance genre, but the truth is the only thing you need to do to get into it is to just kind of relinquish and release any type of unfounded biases or judgments that you may have about the genre.
I notice all the conventions have changed, and it's not trying to find the most wealthy man. Oh. It's not about, you know, finding Mr. Big. It has become about a woman finding her equal.
There's so many things about this book that I loved.
Are there? Yeah.
I love that Jessica Johns is playing with my assumptions of what I expect of Indigenous trauma.
I think that's the genius of this writer. These are the symptoms. She doesn't have to tell you exactly why, because we know why.
One of the biggest arguments that I've heard is that this book is going to break your heart. And it does. I found this book to be relentlessly gut-wrenching.
It's not as happy an ending, but I think that it does show us that even when there's bitter with the sweet, we figure out how to go forward.
I love a good literary book. I love giving all the dense, fabulous prose. But I was like, the power of the future for me was it was almost metaphysical. It was the idea of many ideas. But when you try to concretely grab something, it was intangible.
I get it. The book is dense. But I just want Canada to have a challenge. I don't want it to be, this book is too hard, because I don't believe it's too hard. And I feel like Canada can handle this book.
This is Canada Reads, Canada's annual title fight.
Hello and welcome to an hour of radio where we are going to celebrate Canada Reads. I'm Ali Hassan and I'm your host today, and I'm also the host of Canada Reads. Every year I have the pleasure of moderating thoughtful, passionate discussions about Canadian literature. Now, consider this a major spoiler alert. If you haven't listened yet, I'm going to say turn off your radio, head back to cbcbooks.ca, and then come back and listen to this special. Okay, I think the coast is clear. This year, Montreal author Heather O'Neill was crowned winner after she successfully championed The Future by Catherine Leroux. And over the next hour, we're going to be looking back at some of the best moments from this year's Battle of the Books. So let's get into it. As always, there was an eclectic mix of books on the table this year. The 2024 contenders were Bad Cree by Jessica Johns. This was championed by CBC sports analyst and former Team Canada volleyball player Dallas Sunyas. Shut Up, You're Pretty by Thea Matonji, which was championed by actor Kudakwashe Rutendo. The Future by Catherine Leroux, translated by Susan Uriu, championed by author Heather O'Neill. Meet Me at the Lake by Carly Fortune, championed by fashion content creator Myrian Enjo, and finally Denison Avenue by Christina Wong and Daniel Innes, which was championed by former Calgary Mayor Nahid Nenshi. And after Canada Reads, Nahid immediately entered another contest, the Alberta NDP leadership race. Now, Meet Me at the Lake was the first ever romance novel to make the Canada Reads shortlist. It's the story of Fern and Will in two time periods. First, during their initial meeting one fateful Toronto summer, and many years later after a promise to reconnect is broken.
It's a hot and steamy summer day in Toronto when a woman named Fern meets a man named Will. What happens next is 24 magical hours in the city. Something special. That night, Fern makes a request. Meet me at the lake. Fern waits and waits, but Will vanishes. 10 years later, a lakeside resort in northern Ontario, Fern runs the place and keeps thinking about the past. And with a twist of fate, Will reappears. That familiar spark ignites. A second chance at love beckons. But should they dive in?
On day one of the debates, the conversation turned to the mass appeal of romance fiction. Here's an exchange between Myrian and fellow panelist Heather O'Neill on the power of romance and the centering of women's stories.
Well, when we're talking about the books, I mean, I have to obviously give love to Meet Me at the Lake, because I think the thing about it, and it's an honor to be the first romance novel featured, but I think that the thing about it is that this is a book about interpersonal relationships. It's about human connections, human experience. It is something that you can automatically connect with. You don't have to favor a specific genre to be able to connect to this. I think sometimes people have reservations about the romance genre, but the truth is the only thing you need to do to get into it is to just kind of relinquish and release any type of unfounded biases or judgments that you may have about the genre, and you can find that you will connect to it because these are human experiences. And I think that one of the beauty of, honestly, of the romance genre is that, and featuring it on Canada Reads, is that romance is actually the biggest fiction genre, you know, that exists. It accounts for 25% of all books sold. Like, if we're talking about opening up people to reading and to new reading, romance is the way to go. So,
Heather, your thoughts on that and on the question in general?
It's very funny because I did go into, you know, when this book was on the list, I did have a lot of prejudices against the romance genre. So, and I hadn't thought about it in so long. So I really was like, how do I open myself up to this genre? And then I started thinking about it and really, you know, I went back and I thought about Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice, which was, you know, a template for the romance novel. And that novel was so revolutionary when she wrote it. All the men were up in arms. But it was the idea that you could write about women's issues and you didn't need a big plot or some adventure or wars. But what a woman was thinking and considering about her day was enough for the greatest fiction. So I went in and I started reading different romances. And it's funny because I had not really read... I'd read them when I was a teenager, and, you know, as a child of divorce, I was like, that's terrible, they end up married. Poor people. But then as I was reading this one, I noticed all the conventions have changed, and it's not trying to find the most wealthy man. Oh. It's not about, you know, finding Mr. Big. It has become about a woman finding her equal, someone who will support her and will be her match.
That was Myrian Enja and Heather O'Neill discussing Canada Reads' first ever romance selection, Meet Me at the Lake by Carly Fortune. Later on in the debates, panelists Kudakwashe Rutendo and Nahid Nenshi spoke about the strengths of Meet Me at the Lake.
I also agree with Myrian. Romance is one of the many genres that dominates the publishing industry. So I do also think sometimes in critique of the romance genre, it does fall a bit misogynistic. So I want to be very careful to make sure that's not at all where it's going to. Meet Me at the Lake, it does so many fantastic things. And one of my favorite things about the romance genre is that there's this idea of possibility. Romance is a genre in which you turn around and the person you want to see is there. Like, it's a predictability, it's a safety, it's a lulling and a softness that romance has, and that just surrounds the reader. So I really, really love that in Meet Me at the Lake. Like, you always know that when they turn around, the person that they want to see most is there, and that they're going to find their way back to each other at the end. I think there's such a safety in that, and there's something cozy about that, which I really enjoy.
Nahid, your thoughts?
You know, I asked a bunch of friends who are romance novel enthusiasts to say, okay, this is a romance novel. Is it a good romance novel? And what I really heard back was that Carly Fortune is a master at this craft. And a lot of people love this book. A lot of people loved her first book. Is it Every Summer After?
Yeah, it's great.
Which is next on my reading list after Canada Reads. Because I just want to say her craft is great. I'll tell you one thing I loved. One thing I loved is that Fern always calls Will by his full name, Will Baxter. And to me, there's so much under that that says, She's not seeing him as a real person at the beginning. She's seeing him as a construct in her mind of what the perfect Will Baxter is. And that's just one example of really the incredible cleverness of this book. And I tell you, if she's working on book four, I want Peter's story.
That was Kurakwashe Rutendo and Nahid Nenshi discussing the romance genre and the connection between characters on day one of Canada Reads. And despite these passionate conversations, Meet Me at the Lake was the first book eliminated.
Day one of the Battle of the Books was the feeling out period. We had our first vote and our first elimination yesterday. In the end, it was a 4-1 vote against Meet Me at the Lake by Carly Fortune. It became the first book to be eliminated on Canada Reads this year. Myron, you were championing Meet Me at the Lake. How are you feeling today?
You know, it's a sad day for romance.
I should let our radio listeners know that you, not only is she saying it's a sad day, she is dressed in
appropriately.
A black bride's outfit. Yeah.
It's a mourning period.
It's a mourning period.
Yeah.
All right. Well, before we move on today, why don't you remind everyone why they should read Meet Me at the Lake?
I would be so delighted. So I talked about the merits of the romance genre and how it converts people into new readers, but I really wanted to take a last moment to highlight how Meet Me at the Lake specifically has enough substance to sustain even the most seasoned readers. This book is a catalyst for meaningful dialogue on mental health, anxiety, pregnancy, single motherhood, motherhood in general, womanhood, and more. The plot has an even, steady progression from beginning to end, and the character arcs are fully realized. The author's note at the end provides invaluable context and depth into the character's plot and the mind of Carly herself. It is an essential part of appreciating the story. The discussion questions at the end also provide guidance for how to explore the sensitive topics in the book and keep the conversation going beyond the story. This is a book for all levels of readers in all walks of life, and I still hope that all Canadians will give themselves the gift of experiencing it.
That was Myrene Enja discussing Meet Me at the Lake by Carly Fortune. With one book eliminated and four still in the running, this round of debate saw the panelists challenge one another more directly about their chosen books. Dallas Sunias was defending the novel Bad Cree by Jessica Johns. It's a horror story that centers around a young woman named Mackenzie who's being haunted with disturbing visions.
Mackenzie can't shake the nightmares. Every night, it's the same thing. A relentless murder of crows attacking her sister Sabrina's body. But the lines between the dreams and the waking world start to blur. So Mackenzie returns to her northern Alberta hometown looking for answers. There, in the embrace of her family, she begins to heal. Letting go of the guilt, anger, and pain isn't easy. But with dark forces threatening to swallow her whole, Mackenzie must fight to reconcile with her family, her traditions, the land, and herself.
In a back and forth with Nahid Nenshi, Dallas described how Bad Cree successfully confronted the former Calgary mayor's initial assumptions of the novel.
You know, there's so many things about this book that I loved, and I could.
Are there? Yeah.
I could get into some of the craft things, you know, like I think it's sort of the opposite of Shut Up, You're Pretty, where Taya Mutanji leaves too many gaps. I almost feel like Jessica gives us too much detail. You know, I don't need to know which podcasts Mackenzie is listening to when she goes to bed every night. But I think both my biggest criticism and maybe the genius of the book are that when I was reading this book, I thought it was about something else. When I was reading the book, I thought it was about the things you're talking about, generational trauma, missing and murdered Indigenous women. And as I'm reading it, it's kind of a ghost story. And I love that that Jessica Johns is playing with my assumptions of what I expect of Indigenous trauma with something else. But on the other hand, I feel like if she's playing with those assumptions, I would have liked to see more explicitly some of the intergenerational things you're talking about. Because in the end, it's like Mackenzie has stepped away from a family that actually feels pretty functional. This is a story of women. The aunties are amazing. The mom is there. The kokum, the grandmother, is a guiding spirit. And I just didn't get the themes that you're talking about coming through as clearly as in other contemporary Indigenous fiction.
I completely agree with you. And I think that's the genius of this writer, Jessica Johns. She knows what she's doing. What I just spoke about, that's heavy-handed stuff. Mm. And you can only do that so much. I don't like talking about it. It's always in my face. It's not like you can put it on the doorstep. It's in the kitchen, rattling the pots and pans all day, right? So I think what she has done is she's done it not in a subconscious way, but these are the symptoms. It's not, she doesn't have to tell you exactly why, because we know why. Because people like me, turns out, won't shut up about it, you know? And I argue the family isn't completely as functional as you think. What would you call it? Not necessarily addiction, but, well, yeah, we'll go with addiction. No, there's addictions.
Substance abuse.
Exactly. That's what I was looking for. Substance abuse that we don't talk, we don't, in the book, it's not like we spend a chapter talking about that, but it's there.
It's there.
And that's, again, genius in the way she writes, like, because she just has to come near the subject and we know it's there, you know?
That was Dallas Sunias, Defending Bad Cree by Jessica Johns on day two of Canada Reads. The second day of Canada Reads also featured spirited conversations about community, characters, and craft. Denison Avenue is a moving portrait of a changing city and the grief of a Chinese-Canadian elder. It's set in Toronto's Chinatown and Kensington Market.
Wong Choi Sum has lived in Toronto since 1958. She immigrated to join her husband, Si Hei. In love, full of hope, in a vibrant, changing city, they built a life together on Denison Avenue. Then, a devastating accident. At once, her beloved Si Hei is gone. Alone, time passes more slowly. She notices more, hears more.
Next stop, Denison Avenue.
Her favorite shops are closing. Choi Sum speaks little English. She's turned away from jobs, told that she is too old. She begins to collect cans and bottles, returning them for refund. But she can't escape the grief, or that around her. The world is moving much more quickly. Her neighborhood keeps changing, and then changing again.
Honest Edge is up for sale.
But on her porch, on Denison Avenue, two chairs remain.
The book was championed by Nahid Nenshi, and here he is talking about Denison Avenue's bittersweet ending with Myrian Enja.
One of the biggest arguments that I've heard from Nahid a lot is that this book is going to break your heart. And it does. I found this book to be relentlessly gut-wrenching, honestly. It grabs your heart and it leaves you with a lot of open wounds, because for me, it ultimately raises more questions than it answers. I feel like it doesn't even attempt to resolve any of the major themes it raises, like gentrification, aging population, elder isolation, much of the things you just said here. And it just leaves us with the sentiment that this is a path we all must walk. I found that it didn't leave me as fulfilled as I would like my literature to.
Now, I have your response to that.
You know, I think that is a very important point. But I would say that the line, "this is a path we must all walk," is an important one, because I read the first person narration a little differently than you did. And the reason that I read it that way is because here's a woman who struggles with English. Mm-hmm. And when she's talking to other characters, she's finding it really hard to articulate what's in her brain. But the internal monologue, you actually go, well, this woman is actually brilliant. She's observant. She knows what's going on around her. And we, as people who don't speak her language, would never interpret her that way. I thought that was a very deliberate choice on the part of Christina Wong to say, how you think this woman thinks and how you think she talks is not how she sees herself. But what really moved me in this book was that towards the end, when we realize that she has settled into this new way of life and the days become months and the months become years. And there's this wonderful scene where she, about a year after the incidents that start the book, where she's cataloging her house and starting to clean up. And to me, that is really the bit that was bittersweet, but was showing that she is, in fact, willing to move forward. And the character of the young neighbor, Chloe, really helps us see through a young person's eyes how she is able to move forward. So it's not as happy an ending as Meet Me at the Lake, for example. But I think that it does show us that even when there's bitter with the sweet, we figure out how to go forward.
That was Nahid Nenshi speaking about the novel Denison Avenue by Christina Wong and Daniel Innes. In a dramatic tiebreaker moment, Denison Avenue, which was a fan favorite this year, was the second book eliminated from Canada Reads.
We have a tie. The panelist who did not vote against either of the books up for elimination must break the tie. This is the case even if that panelist is defending one of the two books up for elimination.
Marian Angel, in case that was not clear, you are breaking this tie. There are two votes against Denison Avenue, two votes against The Future. You are in the unenviable position of making a quick decision about which of these two books should be eliminated from Canada Reads.
Oh, gosh. This is very difficult. Let me take a minute. Just give me a second, because I don't want to do this. I know this is a very important and impactful decision. Okay. Denison Avenue. And the name, I should say, is who I want to eliminate?
Yes. The clock is
eeny,
ticking.
Meeny, miny, mo.
We are going black in under 2 minutes.
Denison Ave.
All right.
Okay, and with that, Denison Avenue has been eliminated. You were in here for the long haul, Nahid Nenshi, and you've found out some information. And, we can go back and replay this 100 different ways. I couldn't have called it. Tell me how you're feeling about this. So again, we have maybe 30 seconds, but what are your initial
feelings? Well, I am just so happy that so many people have been introduced to this book. I think this book will stand the test of time as a true Canadian classic. And, you know, I joined Canada Reads because I'm one of those people who has let books leave his life and be replaced by screens. And I'm thrilled that I have started my reading journey again, and I hope others will, and I hope they'll do it with Denison Avenue. One of the challenges about Denison Avenue is that it's too good. People just go, this is beautiful, it's a work of art. But I think the nature of the debate that we had about Denison Avenue actually proves the point that it is that good, that we can now look at stylistic choices, we can look at artistic choices and have differences of opinion on them, but we're able to do that precisely because Christina Wong and Daniel Innes have created this exquisite work of art that Canada should read. And I just want to say thank you to these readers for their love for this book and their passion from which they're talking about this book with their family and friends. And that's really what this is about. And I've had the chance to speak with Daniel and Christina, and they would like me to just pass on their gratitude for this wonderful adventure they've been on, taking their little art project, if I can, about their neighborhood and bringing it to such a huge, wide audience. There's one thing that I want to address that I feel like, you know, maybe I was a little mealy-mouthed yesterday and didn't really say what I wanted to say. So I'll use this moment to suggest that I think one of the really powerful things about this book is its use of the first person and its playing with form in terms of the poetry, the poetic language, and the prose. And to me, what's powerful about that is that it subverts your expectations. So, and I think that's what the book is actually about, that you think and you have biases in your head on what does a poor elderly Chinese woman sound like? What does she think about? What are the priorities in her life? And the book is deliberately written so you can go, wait, she sounds like me. She thinks like me. I think that really is the choice that the author made, and one of the things that I think makes it so special.
That was Nahid Nenshi speaking about Denison Avenue by Christina Wong and Daniel Innes. And that was Myra Nenja breaking the tie and sending Denison Avenue home on day two of Canada Reads. That's 2 days down, 2 more to go. We're halfway there. I'm Ali Hassan, and we're looking back at some of the best moments from Canada Reads 2024. This year, we were looking for the one book to carry us forward. Let's get back into it. With three books left on the table, day three saw a round of thoughtful discussion as the panelists challenged one another on characters and setting. Day three of the debates was full of tense and dynamic moments. Nahid Nenshi and Dallas Sunius went back and forth again, this time with Nahid talking about how Dallas helped him shift his perspective.
Dallas, Marion cast a vote against Bad Cree on day two. What are you going to do today to make sure your book stays safe?
I'm going to, as you so eloquently pointed out, I haven't talked about the narrative in the book. I've been speaking about it overarching metaphorically. Mm-hmm. But I'll work to get into it today. And we spoke about this last night. It's a scary thing to get close to mansplaining, especially to three incredibly intelligent women and His Lordship, like, this is your world. This is where you guys live. So I'm just trying to keep up with you guys. But I will get into the narrative today, and hopefully you understand why I chose the book, because it's not a plan. I love this book.
Can I say one thing about Bad Cree?
Yeah.
This process has been so interesting because I came in with my opinions on all these books. Mm. And listening to all of you talk about these books has really shifted my thinking. And for Dallas, for you, I had the advantage of doing this event with you in Calgary with Jessica Johns recently. But for you, I will tell you something, and I'm not just blowing smoke here, is my challenge with the book is that I didn't think the first time I read it that it addressed the big Indigenous themes. And your defense from the beginning has helped me understand that is the genius of the book, that she addresses these themes, even though you think you're reading a book about aunties at karaoke, that it is about addiction. It is about residential school legacy and all of that. And I would not have gotten there without you taking me down there.
That was Dallas Sunius and Nahid Nenshi talking about Bad Cree. And at the end of this round of debates, Bad Cree was eliminated. And only two books remained in the running to be named the one book to carry us forward. The final day of Canada Reads 2024 was nothing short of riveting. Kutukwashe Ritendo and Heather O'Neill met in an evenly matched battle of literary wits. Heather was championing the speculative novel The Future, written by Catherine Leroux and translated by Susan Uriu.
The French arrived in the 18th century, in what's now known as the city of Detroit. But what if they never left? In another time, another space, Detroit is now Faute d'Etoile. It once gleamed with greenery. It now whispers of darkness, drugs, and despair. Gloria moves into the neighborhood, grieving her lost daughter, holding out hope for her missing grandchildren. On the outskirts of town, along the Rouge River, the flora is alive. The fauna are alive. Here, children roam wild, run free. This is the future, where we dream of beauty, of community, where green grows, hope springs anew, where wild children's laughter echoes through the trees.
Kutukwashe was championing the short story collection Shut Up, You're Pretty by Teya Matonji.
In Galloway, life can be tough, but Loli is a survivor. Forced to grow up too fast, longing for a sense of security, a sense of self, she ventures out into the neighborhood and the world beyond its boundaries. But chaos and uncertainty follow her. Yearning for a deep connection, she stumbles into uncharted territory. Slowly, she peels back the layers of her identity, femininity, and sexuality. As the shadows of grief, violence, and addiction creep into her life, Loli turns to face the light and embraces the beauty in the struggle.
Heather and Kudakwashe went head-to-head about their book's accessibility, resolutions, and ability to carry all of Canada forward.
Kudakwashe, what does Shut Up Your Pretty have that the future does not?
I think foremost is accessibility. I think the future has the most beautiful, dense, lush prose. But for the everyday Canadian, it might come across as a bit challenging. I know when I was reading it, there were some road bumps I ran into with just the descriptions and the paragraphs and the elongated metaphors. I think it's so dense and lush that it's easy to get a bit lost in. Whereas Shut Up, You're Pretty, I found, carried the same art and majesty and wonder, but it was a bit more accessible. Speaking to Taya, she told me about her deliberate choice to choose everyday words so that people from every community, with all access to the various resources that communities have, can still read this book, can still derive meaning from this book. For example, one of my favorite short stories, and this is only temporary, it details the death of Darnell, who's a young Black man. And in one of the opening paragraphs, it uses anaphora, which is this idea of repeating the opening part of a clause. It's usually poetic. We heard that, describing how people perceived Darnell, this boy who died. And then it's saying all the stuff that media perpetrates about the Black community. And then in the end, it's told us who Darnell really is. And you get the immediacy, the potency of seeing how Black young men are illustrated in the media. And then you get it in that artful, literary way. And in a way that is accessible because the word choice was deliberate to make sure that the everyday reader could access it. But you still get that beautiful art, that beautiful deliberate choice and mastery of skill and craft. And I think that in that way, you know, Shut Up, You're Pretty, it handles accessibility a bit better for me.
Heather?
There is this movement, like the books that sell now are the ones that are easy to read, the ones that are accessible. It's like if you go in the bookstore, they're just everywhere. And I understand that, and it's fun. But this is a literary competition, and I feel like it's a competition where books that are doing different experimentation are working with different languages and genres and bringing them together. This is the only opportunity they have to shine. Without it, if we start doing that, there's going to be no more poetry. It's like impossible practically for so many different experimental writers to find publishers. It's impossible for French Canadians to have translated works. Even if it's a massive success, it never gets translated in the rest of Canada because there's this resistance to language. And if you look at novels that people were reading in the 20th century, the Victorian era, they create an atmosphere. And there's a way our minds have gotten boring and lazy. And I feel like Canada can handle this book.
After a week of insightful debates, only one book could be crowned champion.
Kudakwashe, Heather, it is almost time to vote. You have one last chance to persuade the three free agents at the table that the book you are championing should win Canada Reads. I'm going to give you each 30 seconds. Kudakwashe. Your final chance to make a case for Shut Up, You're Pretty. 30 seconds are on the clock.
I really want to harken back to this idea of seeking disruption. I think for everyone, the problem with this book was never about the writing, and it was never about being affected. And that's what we need. That's what is going to bring Canada forward. And then when I contrast this with the future, I think we all struggle with the world building. We're just not convinced of its setting. And for me, that's a really big qualm. One of the benefits of Shut Up, You're Pretty is it's tied and connected to the contemporary world, leading a direct line to dialogue and discussion of contemporary issues, like struggling with beauty and self-worth. And as a person of color and these immigrant communities that have been neglected oftentimes, that is a strength.
Thank you, Kudakwashe. Heather, one last chance to defend the future. 30 seconds are on the clock.
Dallas, you love your boy so much and you've talked about how it changes you. And the idea, like even of your boy alone in the woods, like your boy should never be left alone. It's not even only your responsibility, but that of the whole community. Naheed, you've presided over 6 state of emergency in Calgary as its illustrious mayor. You know how communities come together. Miriam, you have introduced me to so much. And there's genre, and it's played with genre, with magic and fairies, but also the power of women in that, and the thirst for adventure that is in women.
I have the ballots in hand. Heather O'Neill, let's start with you. How did you vote?
I only had one choice. Shut Up, You're Pretty.
Yes. We still ask, just in case. That is one vote against Shut Up, You're Pretty. Kudakwashe Rutendo, how did you vote?
Future.
change. We start with the obvious. One vote against Shut Up, You're Pretty, and one vote against The Future. Nahid Nimshi, how did you vote?
I voted to eliminate Shut Up, You're Pretty.
We have two votes against Shut Up, You're Pretty. One against The Future. Dallas Sunyas, how did you vote?
I voted against Shut Up, You're Pretty.
We have three votes against Shut Up, You're Pretty. And with that, Shut Up, You're Pretty has been eliminated. And The Future is the winner of Canada Reads 2024. Myron Enge.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. I will. There are no secret ballots on Canada Reads. I will let you know.
It's provocative.
It is provocative. Shut Up, You're Pretty.
Yeah.
Was your vote. And let me, I mean, we have, there's not much time left to talk about this. I would love to talk to both of you at length. I'll have some time to do so. But that is something. The book that all of Canada should read is The Future. We're going to celebrate the winning panelist and author on CBC Radio's Commotion tomorrow morning. With this little bit of time that I have had, how are you feeling, Kuta Kwashe?
Very emotional.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
It's all right.
It's okay. No. I am so grateful for the chance that I've had to champion this book. For me, I touched on this. As a Black woman, seeing representation and seeing what Tay has done, I'm thankful to Arsenal and to Vivek. I think that amazing things have been said in Shut Up, You're Pretty. And I think the exact reason that people are uncomfortable are why we need to read this book. Because I said this on one day, but I was like, just because, like, as uncomfortable as you are reading it, we've experienced it. And I really hope, I really hope people take the chance to re-examine that book in this lens. Everything that has made you uncomfortable has been experienced in someone's lives. And there's so many potent discussions about community. And for me, this was finding my way back home. This was permission to mourn and to come to terms with things I've struggled with my entire life. And
Kuta, this is a terrible time for me to interrupt you. An absolutely awful
grateful
time. But we are going to have to say goodbye. This is now my time to turn to you. Congratulations. Heather, tell me how you are feeling.
I mean, right now, I just want to say, Kuta Kwashe, you are incredible. Like, you came up, you're 22 years old. Like, you're coming up against me. I've been in the industry. Like, I talk about books for, you know, for decades more than you've been alive. That you came and put me on edge and you saw me with my papers. I couldn't sleep last night because I knew I had to go up against you in the morning. The way you have spoken about literature and just even after, like at the beginning of the show, I said I wish we could speak 8 hours a day. And like, you know, you and Marianne and I, we would sit down in the hotel and just talk about literature and to have the perspective of two younger, just such brilliant women on the publishing industry. It is like just touched me so much. And I'm so thankful for that.
I want to also take this moment to ask you if there's anything you would like to say to Catherine LaRue in this moment.
Catherine! I feel like, yes, I'm so happy. And I want to thank Catherine for giving me a book that I didn't run out of things to talk about. And each day I found new ideas in it, new themes, new things to touch on. So thank you for giving me this book.
I'll let you also give that message yourself. We have Catherine LaRue here to celebrate alongside with you. Hello, Catherine.
Hi, Catherine.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much. I'm feeling all the emotions right now, but the main one is gratefulness.
That was author Heather O'Neill making history as the first person to win Canada Reads both as a panelist and an author. Her novel Lullabies for Little Criminals won Canada Reads in 2007 when it was championed by musician John K. Samson. Here's Heather O'Neill describing how Catherine LaRue's take on dystopia is an important catalyst for community and hope.
If we just look at the natural world and how she addresses it and dealing with climate change and the struggle and sort of at the beginning, I mean, it is a dystopia. At the beginning of dystopia in the dystopic genre, it doesn't matter what got them to their place because what it is speaking about is that we all live in such a fragile world because of the geopolitical structure. Anything, as we see, you know, we see in Calgary, like fires, anything can push us to that. Like in Station 11, do we care that it was a flu that killed all the people? No. What we want to know is what happens after. Like, how are we going to rebuild? Or how are they dealing with this catastrophe? And a lot of times it's really, there's something joyous. And like, we like dystopia sometimes because it's so awful. And there's something kind of perverse about liking dark literature, which I love sometimes. Just let me see it all fall apart. But then she reverses the dystopian genre and makes it into the idea that disaster can actually herald change, and that we're living in a time of great catastrophe, all of us all over the world. It's hard to watch the news. But there is a way for us to come together as a community and come out of that. And I feel that idea of hope, I had never really thought about it before. And I felt like a different person. And I thought about hope in a different way. As far as the community, I think with all the characters, I mean, it's done sort of stylistically, like they're kept in the middle. And I think she does do an excellent job of threading them all together. And I think, but Gloria is the protagonist. And I think because she's an older woman, people are incapable of seeing her as a protagonist. But she's clearly moving through the books. Yeah. And it's like, if you want to create an unlikable protagonist, start with this line. Alice was 50. Everyone will immediately hate her and think there's something wrong with her. So anyway, but and one of the things in all of these, all of the books that were brought up in Denizen Avenue, Bad Cree, and Meet Me at the Lake, it's this sense of there's all older women in it who are necessary for a community. And I feel the reason, one of the reasons Loli is in the position she is in is because she lacks in the world, not even like, even in the book, but in the outside world, this idea of like capitalism is based on middle-aged women and above being cast aside, burned at the stake, their value. They cannot be productive in a society and happy for capitalism to work. And the reason Loli is so lost is, and she talks about it, is she has no, she doesn't know what it is, but what it is she doesn't have a vision for what it's like to turn 50. And it is amazing. And she needs to start, instead of just acting as though her early 20s are the peak time of her existence where all she can get from life is the gaze of men. She needs to be working on herself, going to, she needs older women as models. And she just is looking around for at girls her age and they're unable to provide any lessons for her. And I'm like, where are the older women in this, in her community? So that was one of the things that I really thought in the future. There is this in each, every person, you see them related to a community. And we see Gloria build herself a community. And within that community, she is able to become a different person herself.
The day after winning, Heather O'Neill and Catherine Leroux spoke to Elamine Abdelmahmoud on Commotion about the Canada Reads experience.
Congratulations to both of you. How's it feeling?
Oh, for me,
Yes. Oh, talk your talk, Heather. You won. That's a huge deal.
But
yes.
It's like I'm still, because it's such a bubble. Like Canada, being a panelist on Canada Reads, it's like, you lose perspective of the entire world because you have these five books and you are so focused on them and we're making
every
notes
day you're going
every
in.
Day. And it's like, I can't even watch a television show, have a phone call, definitely not read another book because I have to keep all the books in my head. So I'm constantly rereading, responding to notes. So it's just to come out of it. And then by the end of the fourth day, it just seems like we're going to be there forever. And we're stuck in some Black Mirror episode where our Twilight Zone, where I've always wanted to talk about literature. And now I'm forced at a table to talk about it
for the rest of your life. Yeah. Katrina, I got to say, listen, we've been hearing from the five champions of the books all week. We don't get a chance to hear from the authors. Okay, so you are now processing the fact that your book has just won. How are you feeling?
Well, it's not quite processed yet because I just heard you say that my book was
the winner, pal.
The winner,
and
I was
like,
you
gotta get used to it.
Really? As I was saying before we got on air, you know, in French, the word commotion means concussion, and that's kind of what I feel like. I feel like it's hard to think. I felt that way most of the week. And I agree. I mean, I was not inside the bubble that you're describing, Heather, but it definitely had an impact on me that I wasn't expected. I'm usually very good at sort of keeping a distance, even if you're, you know, I'm a finalist for something. I'm good at putting that into perspective and
Not this week. This week, I was just, there's nothing else I could think about. And I felt my heart racing all the time and I couldn't sleep.
I've warned Catherine about this. I was telling her about Hannah Reid's, and I was telling her that, you know, you go on the show, because I said one of the things I don't want to do is lose my mind, because a lot of people, panelists, it's like, it's so emotional, and everybody, it's, I mean, books.
You're bringing your history into it, you're bringing vulnerability
yeah,
into
everything.
It, you know?
Yeah, and then, and just the way people watch it, then like, you know, someone, a bookseller texted me and they were like, I've never been so invested in anything in my life. I don't know what's happening. Like when people get caught up in Canada Reads, you get caught up in Canada Reads.
Yeah. I've got to say, Catherine, like when you think about your book and you've been hearing people talk about it all week, because here's the thing, they make positive arguments, but also sometimes negative arguments about the book. Was there an argument in your mind that you heard and you're like, you know what? I've never really thought about that as you were listening to all of these champions talk.
I think that most of the arguments that were raised against the future were things that I sort of knew, or that I knew that people could think.
Right.
Like, you don't have to tell me that I have too many characters. I know. I know I'm like struggling with them. I have lists. I had to. Will you believe that there were 15 more children in the world in the Rouge Park? And what, as soon as my editor read that, he said, Catherine, no, you have to cut like at least half of these children. So that's how it started. That's how the editorial process was started. Yeah. I think every book has its flaws. And when you wrote it, you're very aware of the flaws. And so when arguments are raised against it that are about these flaws, it's not a surprise. And it's not hurtful, because it's like, I know, you know, like every great person is imperfect. And I know the imperfections of the book.
Yeah.
It did make me scared, though, because I, you know, it started making me feel like, oh, maybe I'm not going to make it past the first day. Maybe I'm not going to make it past the second day. And I could see that there was a lot of differences and clashing views about the book. So I was very surprised that it made it to the end, honestly. But it wasn't. I think what hit me more was all my loved ones listening and sending me infuriated text messages and getting so worked up about it. And that affected me more than like having things raised that I sort of, you know, already knew. I know a lot of people had read the book by now, because it's been, you know, it's been available in French for a number of years.
Yeah.
But it's not a collective experience. So it's usually not a group discussion. There's no team around the book. You know, it's a very like one-on-one sort of conversation that I might have with readers.
Yeah.
And suddenly it becomes this huge collective experience. And that's not something that I even realized was possible. And, you know, the whole week I heard Heather and some of the other panelists talk about community. And I think that's the beauty of this contest. It creates a community around reading and around certain ideas and certain characters. I think we all love Loli now. Like we're, you know, like the whole country is like in love with this fictional person. Like this is the magical things that it created.
So Heather, you've now won Canada Reads as an author. And as a panelist, you're the first one to do this. It must have been an entirely different vantage point to do this as a contestant than to, you know, listening at home and be like, oh, someone else is championing my book. But also, it's a show about books, but it kind of surprises people every year how dramatic, how emotional these things get. In the finale, we should say Dallas, one of your co-champions, apologized to the women on the show because he was kind of worried that, you know, about some of the ways that he responded to the debates. Talk to me about what it was like at this table. How did you feel about like the tension at the table?
Today or just in general?
Just in general. That's a lot of tension to just sit around for a week, you know?
It's a lot of tension. Yeah. I think one of the things that helped, we were in the same hotel and we always had dinner together.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, and we talked about other things other than the competition so that we knew each other as people so that it didn't descend at all into like personal
tension.
Attacks.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I think what was so beautiful about this episode, I mean, this one I loved participating in.
The final episode?
Yeah,
you mean?
It was just such a thrill for me because...
Well, it's easy for you to say that because you're one of the final
champions.
That's true. But anyway,
that's true.
Yeah,
but Kuda Kwashwe, like, it was such an intense debate. And both of us, because it was, we'd known each other for 4 days and shared so many ideas, there was a respect. And we knew we were going to take down each other's books, but we both loved each other's books. So we were like, this is a debate. And I think sometimes people, they watch the show, and especially like other writers and publishers, and they really lose the plot. And you know what I mean? And one of the things I loved about Catherine was the only email she sent me was, I saw two spiders in the bathroom, and that means good luck to me. And I was like, oh, thank God she's not like harassing me and like losing her mind. It was so elegant. And I was like, oh, okay, amazing. We got a good luck sign.
It's one thing for authors to begin to tailor their novels to where readers are at. But it's another thing for a publishing industry to say, that's what the readers are looking for. Let's only focus on giving them the stuff. When you say Canada can handle this book, you're saying we can ask the reading public to come meet this book on its terms. Can you talk a little bit about that?
For me, language is always magic. And with my pen, I always think of it as a magic wand. And I do think there is a power in the words. Like, what was interesting was, even when Dallas was talking about Bad Cree, and then he said, you know, let's not name the spirit in Jessica John's book because it's such a powerful thing. We don't want to use the word just in vain. And every time he said the word kokom, like his whole body moved back and the glow came over him. And then I was like, words in themselves are magic. And it's something we as humans have that other animals don't have. And that's what makes us different, the ability to have this magical thing where we can speak to each other and have complex ideas.
That was Heather O'Neill and Catherine Leroux speaking to Elamine Abdelmahmoud on Commotion the day after winning Canada Reads 2024. And there you have it. Those were some of the best moments from Canada Reads 2024. And if you want to watch highlights or rewatch the whole week of debates, just head to cbcbooks.ca. My thanks today to Ashley July and Aaron Balzer for producing this special. And thanks to Kira Mahoney for technical support. And thank you for listening. I'm Ali Hassan. Take care. Until we meet again, read on, Canada.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.